Hi, and welcome to Sped Homeschool Conversations. We're so happy that you are here watching live on our Facebook page, as well as those of you who are joining us on YouTube and our podcast, and also the recorded version on our Facebook page, if you're watching this after we actually recorded it. For those of you who are joining us live, though, just know that you can interact with us this evening on the feed under this video. Sometimes that works and we can see those comments right on this screen. Otherwise, I've got my other computer pulled up just in case, which happened last week. So we'll try to get as many of your questions integrated into our discussion as we can this evening. So welcome for everyone who's here. And I'd just love to introduce our special guest tonight. Her name is Kathy Kuhl, and she has a website called learningdifferently.com and has some great resources on there, as well as she's written a book that helps parents with homeschooling special needs kids. And I want her to just share a little bit about that herself. So welcome, Kathy. We're so glad you've joined us tonight.
Oh, thank you, Peggy. It's a treat to be here and good to get to talk with you and everyone this evening. Yes, you can find me at learndifferently.com.
Yes.
Not learning, learn, okay. Learn differently. That's quite all right. As I was saying earlier, I homeschooled a bright, dyslexic, distractible guy for 4th through 12th grade and had people asking me lots of questions. Wanted to write a book for them, but I knew that what worked for my son might not work for your daughter or your son. Mm-hmm. So I interviewed 64 families across North America homeschooling kids with a wide range of learning challenges to write the book I wish I'd had back when we started in 1997, which is this one, Homeschooling Your Struggling Learner.
Yes.
And since then, I've written two other books, and I love helping parents. So the website has a blog with lots of book reviews and resources, and a way to contact me if you want to talk.
Awesome. Yes, because you do consulting as well as speaking and writing, which are wonderful combinations, as we were talking about before we got started on with the live broadcast. We were saying, you know, how just when we consult, that feeds our writing because we remember, and that brings up, you know, those struggles and how to answer those questions. And so,
exactly.
So that's wonderful. So you're staying current even though your kids are older.
That's right. Right. I've got three grandchildren now, and my daughter said the other day, do you want to move to California and homeschool my daughter? I'm in Virginia, but it's pretty tempting.
Not during the winters, I'm sure.
Yes, yes.
So tonight we're going to talk about about raising never give up kids. And first of all, those of you who are watching and see the feed, there is a link to a handout that Kathy sent me, and we're kind of probably loosely going to be following that. So if you want to pull that up. I can see comments. So Tiffany says hi, and then there's hi from Virginia. Kathy.
Hi back from Virginia.
So for right now, I can see the comments. So that's awesome. So definitely just interject in if you have something to say, or the handout, if you can't find it, it should be at the very bottom, at the first comment in the feed. So if you look down there, you can find that link. So, raising never give up kids. I think that's something that's becoming more of a reality, as you probably would agree, in our society, that kids give up easier.
And yes.
There's some reasonings behind that, isn't there?
Well, kids get discouraged by a lot of different things. I think the economic downturn recently has got more older kids concerned about how they're going to support themselves. Mm-hmm. We've got the constant bombardment of social media and electronics that just expose everyone else who's doing a fabulous job or a silly fun job or something mm-hmm. else going on that makes us feel mm-hmm. sort of like my plugging along in my job or my looking for a job or my wishing I had a full-time job is inadequate. So there's several different pressures on us. Those are just a couple.
Yeah, definitely. And it starts young. It doesn't just start when they've graduated and they're, you know, on the way out. It starts really young. We hear parents talking about their kids having anxiety in kindergarten.
Yes.
And so, you know, what are some ways that we can as parents to combat that?
Well, I think the first thing is to show our kids that we really love them and respect them. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know that we're children are told to honor your father and mother, but I think as parents, we need to honor our kids. I think every person's made in the image of God and worthy of respect. Of course, respecting a 1-year-old looks different than respecting a 17-year-old or a 60-year-old.
That's a good point.
So it'll flow out in different ways. It doesn't mean the 1-year-old or the 5-year-old gets to run everything, but we start to demonstrate respect in lots of different ways. And I think the first one is, listening to them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I totally agree.
Yeah. We've got to practice active listening where we're making sure we understand and asking non-judgmental questions. And
Putting their phone down and looking in the eyes.
That's right. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think the phones are
even responding back, you know, like repeating what they said so they understand you took in what they just said too.
The pastor at the church where my husband and I met had a great phrase for disarming conflict and improving listening and communication. He would say, "Help me to understand." You know, particularly if somebody had done something that really seemed off the wall. It's a great non-judgmental phrase that we can use. Obviously with our kids, particularly with some of our really good talkers, and one of mine's a really good talker, I can't listen to everything.
I've got one of those too.
Yeah, but I've got the radar up, and when the mood changes, when he's starting to shut down, or at specific times during the week, I'm trying to remember to tune my ears into my children to pay attention. With younger kids, just getting a little bit of time to play with them one-on-one, free that up. Older kids, elementary and on up through teens, sometimes in the car can be a really good time to listen to them. There's, if you put the phones away, there's fewer distractions. If you don't have the movie going, then, and for older kids, it's nice because there isn't the eye contact, and sometimes kids will relax a little bit more when you're not looking at them. Your mind's on your driving, and sometimes they'll open up a little more.
Just nonchalantly, you ask a question, and you know they're stuck there.
They're stuck, but also sometimes I think some of the kids will feel a little freer, like mom's really listening now. She's not trying to cook dinner and get the last child through the math lesson and do six other things. So listening would be my first way. And when I say listening, I also want to share something I got from Wayne Rice's book, Enjoy Your Middle Schooler, which is a book worth getting just for that title, Enjoy Your Middle Schooler.
Yeah, exactly. Because most people like that, that's the age. I know when people even go into teacher training, they're like, no, not junior high.
That was my first job out of college, actually. I taught junior high. But it's an interesting age. But Mr. Rice's point, and he was a youth pastor, was that you can't schedule quality speaking time with your kids. You can't say 14-year-old or 8-year-old, you're going to have a significant conversation and tell me what's on your heart on Tuesdays at 7:45. You know, I've blocked that in for you. In fact, I have a friend who didn't homeschool at all, but she said it was more important to be home with teens than with adults or toddlers because you can't schedule those conversations.
Yeah.
So Wayne Rice's idea was you set aside time to have a date with your kid. With a toddler, it might be you go to the park together, just even play for a few minutes. Elementary school child, maybe you go to the park, maybe you take a walk, take the little boy to the hardware store and look at the tools and the cool tool belts and everything.
Right.
But there's this downtime where you're not going to lecture. It's not judgmental. You're there to listen. I think of it as training for when the child's moved away and I want them to come visit. So. Yeah. I'm just practicing. I've got designated no lecture time. I don't tell them this, but that's my agenda.
Yeah.
And I found with all ages, that's so helpful. to, and it communicates you care and you love them, that you want to do that. Now, I've got a friend who's got four kids, and I know friends with many bigger families, but it's doable even with larger families. My friend and her husband have a calendar on the fridge, and every Saturday, dad takes one of the kids out. I think they go out for donuts or something, but it doesn't have to involve money, just a bit of time.
Right.
And that's, communicates so much and lets you listen better.
Yeah. And whether it's an activity that you do together or whatever. And I, you know, God taught me that lesson when my oldest was kind of getting ready to leave. It's, you know, the things that he would do would totally frustrate me, but it was, you know, the voice and, you know, that my scripture verses always were bringing me back. It's the relationship, not the judgment. You know, you've got to press through this because what they're going to come back to you. And we forget that when they're, you know, we're in the midst of all the craziness of the, you know, junior high, early high school, is that they have a choice.
Yes.
To seek out your opinion. And I want them to, you know, my son messages me, you know, I have to have a special app to be able to talk to him because he's on a gaming app, but at least I have a gaming app on my phone too. Yes.
Well, that's the important thing. Actually, I have found with my adult children that texting is really effective because it forces me to keep it short. And that's a problem for me. So I have to be concise. My husband used to say when my kids were teens, he would say less and mean more. Just whittle it down.
That's great advice.
It's been really helpful. And it's also nice with older kids, if you know your child's away at college or grown like mine are, you can send a text. They will see it, unlike the emails, which the older kids aren't reading anymore, and they can answer at their convenience and you can answer at your convenience. And so that's real helpful.
So listening, what else do we have?
Valuing their input. Part of this listening is you want to listen for useful content. So you know, you can't get their input on everything, but you can let the toddler decide whether to wear the blue shirt or the green shirt. You can let the first grader who's writing a paragraph on one of the characters in the book you're reading aloud to them, or in his case, it would be a sentence or two, but he can pick which character. Or an older child, you might say, we've been using this math curriculum and I'm thinking about this other one. Have a look. Doesn't mean I'll necessarily pick your choice, but I want to hear what you like about this and what you like about that. So getting their input and showing that you value it is another way to communicate respect.
So
and
true.
You want to also help them next to be training them in decision making. So maybe if it's the curriculum, maybe it's a vacation you're having, you want to start talking with them about how I make a decision. Greg Harris had a great article about this in the Homeschool Legal Defense's court report a few years back about called Outgrowing the Greenhouse. And he talked about sitting down with his kids and starting to talk about how he made a decision. And I've been reading William Stixrud and Ned Johnson's book. I just mentioned that to you. It's not on the handout. It's a new one, The Self-Driven Child. And they make the point.
It's on Amazon.
Self-Driven Child by William Stixrud and Ned Johnson, who live in my area, it turns out. I actually know Dr. Stixrud, and he's a fan of homeschooling. He's a neuropsychologist. His shop tested my son, but he's got a lot of sensible things to say. And I'm only partway through the book. I'm looking forward to reading the rest of it. But he's saying that we've got to have it to have a self-driven child. We have to let our children be in charge of certain decisions and gradually communicate. Let them have more responsibility. But the big thing is we want them to know that we are confident that they can make a good decision. Now, I'm not confident that my six-year-old would, when he was six, would have chosen a nutritious meal, but it's a process. And there's some things I can't let them decide. To going back to six-year-olds, my daughter went through a phase where her idea at age six or five was that it, what would really look good together would be a purple turtleneck with a red skirt or vice versa. She kind of went through her purple and red stage. Well, it didn't hurt anybody except my eyes a little bit, but you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But you let them make decisions and communicate respect, because when people, whether they're kids or adults, feel out of control, then that makes them more stressed, more anxious, and it makes them hard to have a harder time. And we can't expect to decide everything for our kids up to age 18 and then say, okay, now you're an adult, you're in charge.
Exactly. No, I talk about that, and I have a talk I give on parenting anger and just how to restore, you know, how it relates to character training, because God actually builds that anger in us for a reason. But one of the things I talk about is every time we correct our kids, we teach them about these natural boundaries they have to build. And so eventually when we leave, those boundaries are what stops them, not us.
Right.
But like you're saying, there's so many parents that, you know, that do that helicopter thing until their child leaves the home. And then they wonder, why did everything fall apart? Well, because you were making all their decisions for them.
Right. And I think that's harder for those of us with kids with special needs, because the consequences just seem so much bigger, and it's very scary. But I'm excited to be reading this book, because William Stickstrud spends all his time working with kids with different kinds of learning challenges. And so he gets that.
Right.
And that's been helpful. That's what I've been thinking about this week, helping them, nurturing that. And along with listening to specifics, you know, which thing they want to do, what thing they want, book they want to read, or any of that, you also want to be listening for what matters to them. You know, a lot of us, you know, you look at your kid and you just, this child has different challenges, and you're thinking, I have no idea what this kid could ever do for a living. If you had asked, if you had asked me when my son was 11,
out loud.
Clue. I mean, he couldn't even count to 100 when he was 9 or 10, because the processing, the sequencing was hard for him. And I thought back then, this is dated now, but back then I thought, he can't count to 100. He can't make change. Not even McDonald's will hire this kid. Well, now machines make change, and it's not a big deal. And he's got a much better job than that. But I was stressing out about that was going to work. And what I needed to do was pay attention to what he was good at. He is really good with people. He held his first yard sale when he was 4, and he didn't tell me.
Really?
One of my neighbors knocked on the door and said, you know, Steve's having a yard sale. Can I really buy this red wagon?
Oh, funny.
I was so happy he was doing it. I said, sure, go ahead. Little baby wagon he'd outgrown. So she got it for a quarter, and we were all happy.
That's great.
But, and then take that with his sister, who has got a PhD and has been Miss Bookworm and academic all her life. She's great. They're both great kids, but they're very different. She was the one that didn't ever want to talk to a stranger.
Yeah.
So I had to do different things with her to encourage that, and other things with him. But I had to pay attention to what they're good at and nurture that. Related to that, you always want to remember, if they're only good at one thing, don't take it away as a punishment. If if all they care about is learning to program a computer, and you've got to discipline them, take away movie time, take away something else, take away dessert.
Exactly.
But, and you know, certainly take away computer games, that's fine, but let them program. Or if all they love is soccer and that's the only thing they really think they're any good at, then don't pull them off the team, no matter how difficult things have been. You want to pay attention to what they value, and that helps them.
Yeah. I even talk about how, you know, making those things into subjects in your school, because especially when they struggle at every single academic thing you put in front of them, having the relief of one thing, oh, this is school and I'm good at it. You know, it may not be academic related at all, but it still shows them that, you know, this can be learning, and this is something you can be good at to learn.
Yeah. There's a guy in the homeschool group I helped lead a few years back. He was there, who is actually so good at lining up dominoes in elaborate patterns that he's gotten paid to do this. There's a Brazilian petroleum company that hired him and used him for an ad on their national television. with some amazing thing. And you could imagine this guy when he was a little younger and he was 10 and he was only lining them up by, say, hundreds instead of tens of thousands like he does mm-hmm. now. You know, what if mom had said, oh, put that away.
Right.
That's just a kid thing. Well, he's learned to use a camera. He's learned to negotiate contracts. He's this has turned into something. He may not be doing dominoes the rest of his life, but you got to just not think in terms of dominoes or just soccer, but think of things like planning and camera work and logistics and negotiation, or with soccer, teamwork and perseverance and all these other things.
Yeah, there's so much more involved than just the basics of what the subject is, I guess we could call it.
Yes. Yeah. And we worry about that. I get parents saying, you know, well, he hasn't got through American history. What about this? No.
I don't know if I learned much American history in public school either. So
I love history, and that's why I'm still reading biographies. That's my favorite way to learn it. But you can't get too obsessed about, oh, I have to have this child perfect by 18. They have to have checked all these boxes.
Maybe. I remember when my son graduated, my oldest, I kept saying, you can't go. I didn't teach everything. And I realized, oh, I can't do that. I'm still learning things.
Exactly. Well, the final ways we show respect to kids are by setting reasonable goals. You know, don't make things impossible. Don't give them more. I mean, if you actually give them way more work than they can do, or this math book we thought we could do in a year is really 2 years, then that's okay. Roll with it. But make sure the goals are reasonable, challenging, but reasonable. And the last one is keeping your promises to your kids.
Yes.
That's an important way to show respect, which is why so often so many of us say, we'll see, because we don't want to promise. But in a way, I think that's good, because our kids have got to know they can depend on us.
Yes. That's so very true. And it really does make them more stable in their own environment when they know that the rest of the environment around them is stable. When all of that goes off kilter and a lot of it's stuff they can't control, you know, just things going on in your life and the community around you. But if they can control a little bit, like you said, inside of that bubble, then it allows that anxiety to be released and for them to just settle into that and to realize who they are and how they can use that decision making as they get older and start making decisions that are going to impact them greater than, you know, choosing the red or the blue shirt.
Exactly. Yes. It's a long process.
Yeah. And there's no right way to work. You know, some kids just naturally handle that much better than others. So do you have any advice for parents, you know, if they have a child who really just has a hard time with anxiety and, you know, not wanting to make those leaps? You know, I realize with my kids, you know, I've raised them both the same way, yet one is more anxious than the other. And we were just having a discussion about my 19-year-old and how fear often drives a lot of what he does. And my husband comes back and he goes, well, yeah, I do the same thing. It's like he needs that wife that just pushes him.
I think I was that kid. And so I guess the first thing I'd say is be patient, because being like that, even when you're 19 or 22, doesn't mean you're going to be like that the rest of your life. People keep growing and changing. Thank the Lord. There's potential there. I think it's important to nurture some, going to start with practical physical things that may sound too simple, but getting enough sleep is so important for our us and our kids, getting exercise. And even if you're like me, it took me till I was in my 40s before I found an exercise I actually liked, you know, and then find something I could be good at. That's a whole nother issue where we're not going there.
Yeah, exactly.
but for our kids, just continuing to try different things. Now, for a lot of us with kids with different kinds of challenges, it's not going to be a competitive sport.
Right.
Maybe there's a t-ball or an adaptive sport your child can do. But it doesn't have to be a competitive sport, and it doesn't have to be a sport that involves throwing and tossing balls, which is a good thing, because I'm not good at that. Because
eye-hand coordination. And you know, the more you give your children something they can take on for the rest of their life versus, like, you know, a lot of those competitive things, who that played football, you know, in high school is still playing football? Very few of us.
Right.
Especially at our age.
And some of the ones that do are suffering from effects of concussions and other things. But yeah, and how many kids think they're going to go pro basketball or pro football? And some of them do, and that's wonderful.
Yeah,
I'm really in favor of looking for sports that you can enjoy across the lifetime, like hiking or dance or canoeing, martial arts. Martial arts is an interesting one. I know an excellent Christian couple that runs a dojo near here, and they're fabulous with communicating respect, self-control, self-discipline. Mm-hmm. And I've seen them work wonders with kids I've watched there for years. So that could be good. And those kinds of sports, particularly the hiking, martial arts, some of the other things, are not competitive, or you're only competing against yourself.
Right.
So that reduces a lot of stress.
Yeah. And then stress levels go down when you get your dopamine levels up.
Exactly.
With your, when you exercise. So.
Yes. Yes. It's really good for you. So I would encourage you, keep trying different things, you know, for your kids. I would tell my son, you know, the first time we signed up for karate, I said, it's a 6-week session. You need to go twice a week for 6 weeks. And if you want to quit then after that, fine.
Yeah.
And some once in a while he'd say, oh, this is hard, I want to quit. And I would say, okay, but we got to finish this 6-week session. And by the end of the 6 weeks, he always wanted to re-up. So he made it to blue belt over several years and really made progress. But
it is important to have them know that they have an out at some point too.
Yes.
Because otherwise you're becoming, again, that helicopter type of parent of, you're going to do this. This is what you need to succeed. You know, if you stick to things, then it shows that, you know, you can stick to things through life. Well, not always. You know, it's nice to try and see what we're good at too, because who wants to be stuck in a job that they're trained for, but they never loved in the first place? Maybe they stuck it out just because that's what they were taught to do.
Right. There needs to be a short limits. So if your child, like a friend of mine's son, has decided he is crazy to learn to play the trombone. Like, she told me they rented his first trombone last week and he was jumping up and down with excitement in the store. So they had a discussion and she says she figures in December she'll probably be having to nudge him to remember to practice. But whether it's an instrument or a sport or something, it's good to say, all right, you know, if your parents were going to commit to driving you there and spending this much money, we expect you to do this. And then if you want to quit, you know, at Christmas, next summer, that's fine. There's no point in strapping kids anything too long. And of course, if it was a really toxic situation, if there was an abusive coach or cruel kids on a team that the coaches were not suppressing at all, then I think that's puts it in a whole different category.
It does. Yeah, definitely. And so, you know, and as a parent, you become wise to when your kids, you're pushing them too hard.
Yeah.
Or when, you know, you need to push them a little bit more because they're not going to do it on their own. Because that teaches them that life is hard. You know, I remember telling my son too about, you know, life is not fair. He's like, this isn't fair. I'm like, well, life isn't fair. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
But we lived on a farm for 5 years. And I think that was the most character building time for our children, because living in a city, it was a little easier doing chores. But when an animal's life depended on you to be outside.
Yes.
And we lived in Minnesota. And so -10 in the morning, my son wrote a paper about, you know, how cold it was up in the attic when he got out of bed. You know, think Little House on the Prairie. Let's just say that it was 50 degrees at least in his room during the winter. And, you know, just it had times of trauma. My kids found dead animals when they would go out. You know, so many life lessons that I could not have replicated in any other place. But those were hard too.
You know?
And but it did teach them to be strong through a lot of other things in their lives.
Yeah, for those of us that don't have those opportunities, and I'm remembering now my sister-in-law who married a cattle rancher, and so I know more of what you're talking about from that. She once told us that really the best thing we should do for our son would be for my husband to quit his job and start a chicken ranch. Instead, we got my son working at a local park that was had a farm on it, and he started doing some things there. For others of us, that's not feasible, but maybe taking care of a pet or other different kinds of work. To go back to your question about the anxiety, though, a child who's anxious, along with exercise and sleep, I would say you want to train your child in emotional awareness. One of the books on the handout I particularly like is John Gottman's book, Raising an Emotionally Intelligent Child. A lot of us, some of us grew up in houses where there was far too much emotion and we sort of like to tamp down. Others of us are very expressive and maybe our kids feel sort of overwhelmed by that. But there's a place in between those where you are naming and identifying emotions. You're not trying to deny them. You're not trying to pump them up and make them last 100 years, but a controlled response. And that begins with giving our kids vocabulary. I had the oddest conversation with my 3-year-old granddaughter on this. We were Skyping the other day. She had been found doing something naughty and was upset about it. And her mom and dad were wonderful with her. She taught, and the odd conversation was the next day. We were talking about how she had done this wrong thing and had been caught. But her dad had given her some language for this. She felt very uncomfortable when she got caught and denied it. And she looked at me on the camera as we're Skyping and grinned and said, "I was ashamed."
Aww.
And I realized she was smiling, not because she'd done wrong or because being ashamed is fun, but she now has a word for that feeling when you've done something wrong. And that's great. That's a perfect example of what I'm talking about. We want our kids to understand their emotions, be able to name them, to be able to talk about how they're feeling. And then we want to slowly teach them to brainstorm, you know, what are you worried about? What could happen here? I was an anxious kid, as I mentioned, and my dad used to say to me, "What's the worst thing that could possibly happen?"
And that leads you down the wrong way.
Well, it can, but sometimes he would just sort of be grinning at me saying like, "Okay, and how likely is that, Kath?" And I'd say, "Yeah, you're right. And even if that did happen, what could you do?" And I'd say, "Well, we could do this." And he'd say, "See?" So yes, for a kid with an anxiety disorder, I'm not recommending that approach. But it is helpful to talk over a problem and brainstorm solutions and help our kids see that even if this does go bad, it's not the end of their lives. There's hope. Things are manageable.
And there's always something to learn from it. And our kids need to learn that, you know, we all make mistakes and those mistakes are given to us as opportunities to take away stuff from them.
Yeah. I think sometimes in my case, when I was being, you know, confessions here, when I was being anxious like that and perfectionistic, it was almost like I didn't want to admit I wasn't perfect.
Yeah.
And so I have to remind myself only God is perfect.
Yes.
I mess up. I make mistakes. Sometimes I sin. There's two different things. But in that case, I ask forgiveness to people I've hurt, ask for forgiveness of God when I've sinned, and then you repent and move on. Right. It's no point beating yourself up, whether you're an anxious 12-year-old or an anxious mom.
Exactly. Yeah. The more you live in grace, the better off you are and everyone around you.
Oh, yeah. Good point. Yeah. You're no fun to be with either.
I used to live in a depressive state, and I definitely wasn't the good person to live around at that point.
That's hard on everyone.
Yeah. So what else do you have to tell us about, you know, helping our kids to just persevere, I guess, is kind of, you know, the underlying discussion that we're having.
Well, let's see. We've talked about a number of things I wanted to mention. I think it's real important that our kids have time for unstructured play. And I wanted to talk about that because there's a temptation We're homeschooling. We're trying to get through all the subjects. Everyone listening here probably has a child with one or more subjects that that's a challenge in. And maybe you're going to therapy a few times a week. Maybe you've got some extra doctor's appointments. It probably involves a bunch of driving. Maybe you've got commitments in your church and your community that take up your time. And we can just get so busy. Our kids don't have time to be kids.
Yeah, that's so true.
When you let your child have unstructured playtime, they get to be in charge. And I'm not saying that as they're a selfish person who wants to be in charge, but a kid's being told Tuesday we have to go do this, Monday we have to go do that. They don't get to make any decisions. And I've seen my kids when they were little be out on the hill on the side of the house, you know, and these acorns are people and these there's a flood going here and we're going to do this and the trucks will go this way. And all, you know, my daughter's Barbie dolls evaded many natural disasters using shoeboxes as boats and also
exactly.
She had these traumatic stories you would love. I mean, it's not the Barbie you imagine when you think of that, but the kids would do that. There'd be families and dynasties and relationships made out of little tiny figures, and they'd have whole Lego towns and develop these long narratives. But whether your kids are great narrators like mine are, or they're doing something else, even if it's not as funny and detailed as my kids were, that's so powerful because they're getting to decide who's going to win, who's going to lose. They're going to see justice done, wrongdoers punished.
Exactly.
And it lets them build those senses of right and wrong and consequence and lets them have a little independence, which is good for them.
Definitely. And they get to practice out scenarios that don't harm anybody else. You know, how would this work? You know, and that's so good just for them to be able to do that in a safe setting to you know, and to not, like you said, when they're under pressure, their mind is not going to go into those places that, you know, well, you got 10 minutes free time. What are you doing 10 minutes? I mean, you need hours. I remember my son would, we spent a good deal of one summer building a tree fort for our kids. And that was one of the most productive uses of our time because our kids would spend so much time in that tree fort making up make-believe things, you know, that so it was well worth the resources put into to that.
Right. There's a tendency now to feel like we need to take care of our kids and watch them all the time. A couple years ago, a family in Maryland got in trouble with the police for letting a 6-year-old walk home from the park to home with her 9 or 10 year old brother. There were people calling the police and saying this child was a neglected family. It was in the papers nationally for a couple of days and around here much longer. But our kids need unstructured time and time of where they're responsible. We are blessed back behind these shades are our yard and then parkland and woods and a creek. And so I would let my kids, even starting out when they were 9 and 12, when we first moved here, go back in those woods and they'd build shelters. And I didn't know where they were, but I had a system.
Yes.
We developed a system. I had a recorder. And I would, if they heard me blow 3 notes, they knew that meant they need to whistle back so I could know they were okay. And if I did it again, that was a signal to come home, I need you. So we had that flexibility and that was wonderful freedom for them. You may not have that, you know, your apartment building may not provide that in your different urban settings, different settings, but look for what you can do. I mean, urban kids can go to the store a lot sooner than kids that live in some places. So look for those opportunities. Is your kid old enough to run down to the store and pick up bagels? Maybe they are.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean they aren't going to not make always good decisions.
No.
We've had bones sometimes like that. Our kids built the bobsled down to a frozen lake and almost hit a rod in the way down. I have stories. I have boys. But I think it has allowed them to definitely take ownership of a lot of things in their lives because those opportunities were not so always structured for them.
Yes.
Yeah. We have a viewer that made a comment. Amy said, yes, my son loves to have his morning to himself to play, and then he focuses so much better in the afternoon. I'm trying to accommodate this around a new schedule I have to follow, and we are having so many battles about schoolwork now. His playtime in the morning is so important. He has grown so much socially by having that time. So yeah, that's difficult when, you know, mm-hmm. I find that, you know, if you don't get your kids started with school in the morning, then yeah. oftentimes you kind of lose them for the rest of the day too.
Right. I would think about some kind of compromise, like trying to say, you know, okay, we need you. Let's assume this is a child that can get up at 7. Okay. I need you all ready by 8, and then you can have till 9:30, and then I need this. When we homeschooled,
yeah,
something mm-hmm. with a timer, a system where he gets a good chunk of that. Some of times breaks during the morning are so important. We had a 20-minute break between language arts and math every morning. And then we dive into our math, we mix things up, and then it was time for lunch and we had recess. One of the best things about starting to homeschool, which we did when my son was fourth grade, was he could go play with his Legos every single recess, which he just thought was fabulous.
Oh yes, I have a Lego loving child too.
Yeah.
We just moved and I think there's like probably hundreds of pounds of them that we moved.
Well, my kids are all grown and I still have Legos in the house. We're saving them for, although, no, I was going to say we're saving them for grandchildren, but actually I think the kids still want them themselves.
I know. I don't think my son would ever let anyone touch them. So I don't know where they're going to go, but he's away in college and they're all stuffed in his room right now.
That's good. You're not stepping on them. That's the main thing.
Yes, exactly. Catherine made the point. She said, kids need to be able to entertain themselves sometimes and be mm-hmm. okay with directing their free time. And yeah. And mm-hmm. even, you know, yes. when you have guests over, when, mm-hmm. you know, they need to understand that it's not always about them mm-hmm. and that them entertaining themselves is a good thing. It's not a punishment that you don't have time for them. It's
right.
just a time that that is set apart for them to grow. And if they see that you see it as important, I think that's
yes,
that's important too.
My kids did so much of that. We're so creative about it. I really enjoyed listening to them come back and tell me what they'd been doing.
Mm-hmm.
That unstructured time was a blessing to them. And it's also a blessing to me. I used to tell the kids when they were younger and asking me what to do, I'd say, I'm not the cruise director, you know.
Exactly.
Here is the clay. Here is the paint. You could also do this. You could think mm-hmm. about making a card for your grandma, cause she's been saying, you know, give them a few things, but you know, it's up to you. And if you really mm-hmm. need something to do, well, there's bathrooms.
You know, right. Yeah. I've got jobs to do.
So that really motivates them a lot to find fun ways to play. Another mm-hmm. way we can help our kids be more resilient, be these never give up kids, is to help them learn to cope with mistakes. And that goes back mm-hmm. to the anxiety thing yes. we were talking about before. Our kids have to understand that mistakes are common.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I teach writing. I've written books, but I give workshops on mm-hmm. helping kids write. My first student teaching was English, so I've taught mm-hmm. English and math, and I think a lot about teaching writing to kids who struggle with it. And you get kids who are so anxious about that kind of work because they imagine that, you know, that I sat down one day with a pen and wrote 400 pages, you know. So over and over again, I say, real writers rewrite.
Mm-hmm.
You write down the lousy first draft, and then you start working on it and fixing yeah. it. And that was hard with my daughter as a high school student. She would refuse to write a first draft because she hated it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just had to say, it's okay if you hate it.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. just something on paper to work with. Another way we can help our kids coping with mistakes is by showing them how we cope. So mm-hmm. when I've lost the house keys for the 500th time, what do?
Exactly.
With me, that's not an exaggeration in my case. But it's helpful if I say to the kids, you know, if I say out loud the process that's going through my mind of how to search for them.
So important, yes.
Okay, let's see the last coat I was wearing. I'm going to check those pockets, those jeans I had on yesterday, mm-hmm. you know, and mm-hmm. go through that. And I might even brainstorm with them, okay, you've got violin lesson in 30 minutes. So if I can't find the keys, what can we do to get you there? We could ask Mrs. So-and-so to give you a lift, you know, just brainstorm alternative solutions, because otherwise we get the deer in the headlights thing.
Yeah. And then they can start to panic without you even knowing it. And then it ruins the whole rest of the day, because internally they've already created so much anxiety over something that you weren't even anxious about. But you never processed. And that's such a good tip for parents to process out loud. And well, process if you're processing well. There's the key.
You got to model it.
Yes, exactly.
You got to have something worth modeling.
Yeah. But again, back to those mistakes. I do mess up, you know. Sorry, kids. I did not process that one properly. Let's go back, ask forgiveness, and move on.
So another way we can help our kids keep going is by nurturing an attitude of gratitude. Encouraging our kids to be thankful for things. I'm one of those people that's, you know, the glass half empty time when I start to get anxious, at least. And it's so easy to see what's missing. And I've basically, sometimes I'm an absolute ingrate. When if I stop and think about all the ways God's blessed me, it's just overwhelming. And it, I have so much to be thankful for, and yet I'm focused on, you know, oh, my watch strap is breaking. You know, well, how about your watch has been working for so many years, you know, with every detail, mundane or important, there are things to give thanks for as well, instead of just focusing on what's lacking.
Right.
And everyone who's watching this has access to a computer. There's one thing we can all be thankful for. I've got electricity. There's hurricanes coming, but I've got power. And I've got drinking water that isn't going to make me sick, that I've been sipping on while we're talking. And if we can help our kids develop that attitude of giving thanks to God and being grateful, not turning into an Eeyore going on about everything that's gone wrong, you know.
Could go wrong.
Yes, exactly. That's another part of that emotional awareness. Am I being an Eeyore?
And you know, some people just naturally have that tendency to see the glass half empty, and they have to realize that about themselves and that tendency. I'm always the glass half full. My husband's always the glass half empty. We balance each other out well. It frustrates me that he's always so pessimistic about everything, but then I think it frustrates him that I always see everything is turning out well. So there's a flip side to that too.
Realism is important. It sounds like your marriage is like mine, because I'm not generally, I'm the, oh, things will work out. I'm going, well, maybe we should do something to help that work out.
Right. So as we're talking about this, you should be praying for your children's future spouses that they help them be more resilient too.
It's a
lifelong thing. You know, it's not something that when our children graduate out of our home or, you know, move on to what they're going to do next, that we get them to that place where they're their most resilient.
Yeah. I think we can also encourage our kids to pray specifically for wisdom and us pray it for them. We want our kids to be wise. That means encouraging them to look for wise friends and people that will help them make good choices. Bad company corrupts good morals, says the book of Proverbs. And that takes time. Once again, we can't be mom and dad coming in and pruning off all the relationships we disapprove of. There was one, my son met a child, when a boy, when they were both about 15, and the boy struck me the wrong way. He seemed like he was a little artificial and a little too insincerely polite with me. But my son had met him through a homeschool group, and we had him over, they did some stuff together, and my son came up to me afterwards and he said he didn't want to have that guy over again, because he really was nasty, pretending to be nice. And if I had just said, no, we cannot do anything with this. I made it in our house, so there was some control. And I didn't say, go off and spend the weekend with this fellow.
Right. Yeah.
So that was helpful. And as an aside, I have to mention, as a Jane Austen fan, that my son told me this in the absolute best possible way. In Pride and Prejudice, there's a character just like this who seems very nice and slick, and he's been mistreated, he says. He's George Wickham, and he's really a scoundrel. So the way my son talked to me about this, he said, that guy's really a Wickham. And I thought, yes, for two things. My son's got discernment, and he quoted Jane Austen.
He transferred his knowledge. We talked about that last week.
Yeah, right. Literature is coming to real life. So.
But yes, you would have denied your son that choice, and it wouldn't have permeated into his future to make that choice based on people's character as well, because you would have stepped in and done that for him. And we do get so many, and those opportunities, I think, make us very uncomfortable.
Yes.
Because we aren't sure what they're going to decide.
And that's scary. We have to remember that God's sovereign.
Yes.
Just because, you know, if my son had hung out with that guy and we'd had several, even if we'd had some difficult months as a result of that, it's not that, you know, oh no, my son's taken the wrong step and now his life is irreparably damaged and God can't fix it.
There's nothing God can't fix.
No, God's in charge. And if we just look back at our own lives, we can see that he's going to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes it's for us with the hard heads. it takes a lot of falling down to get us in the right place.
Yes. Hard heads or also folks that have been hurt. You tend to think, oh, well, that disappointment, that trauma, that setback is going to be with me maybe for my whole life. Maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
God can mend anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beauty for ashes.
Mm-hmm. We've been reading, we read a book last month. With my team, we study a book each month. And last month we read Living from the Heart That Jesus Gave You. And it talked about how trauma not only shapes us as to how we react to things, but how we can be built up by the body of Christ afterwards and who God is making us into. And it was so powerful to be able to talk about that. Cause I think we focus on, you know, just the hard parts of that, but we don't focus on what God has the possibility of turning that into and how community, being around other people, is what heals that.
Yes.
And so I think, you know, as a takeaway too, what you're saying is, you know, this relationship with your child is what facilitates them to be resilient.
Yes.
Because it's your interaction with them and the steps that you kind of, you know, it's like a dance that you take and allow them eventually to take the lead. And
yes.
And so when they're ready, they feel like, you know what, I can dance this dance and I'm ready to take it on myself.
And if we don't think they're ever going to dance that dance, or we don't think that God is ruling over the situation, we can't communicate anything better than that to our kids. So we've got to first turn to our own hearts and say, okay, do I really want to sincerely believe God's in charge of this child's life? Do I really believe God loves my child more than I do? Yeah. And if you say the words out loud, you think, well, of course. But in the back of our minds, we're thinking, well, maybe God's going to do something I wouldn't really want my kid to go through. Nobody wants to see our kids hurting. But you think of all the times we have been hurt and God's worked great good from it. So we really have to trust God with our kids.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it really boils down to. So we have about 5 minutes left, and I just want our audience to know, if you have any questions for Kathy, this is a great time to put those in. And I think we talked about your website at the beginning. I just want to bring that up. Let's see if I can. There it is.
Yeah, and learn differently.
Let's see if I can put it up here. So there it is. And you have a lot of resources for parents. You've got a blog, and you do consulting also.
Yes.
And your information is also on our website under the consultants. So
And there's my other two books. at staying sane as you homeschool.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, I didn't ask the kids if I was qualified to write that one. I just wrote it down. That's kind of my love letter to my homeschooling parents, you know, what taking mm-hmm. care of yourself so you can take care of your kids. And yeah. So if this talk was helpful to you, a lot of this material and a bunch more is in my third book, which, whoop, there it is, Encouraging Your Child, this one.
Ah, yes.
So a lot of things we didn't get to today, like using rewards and treats effectively, how to praise your child and what to praise them for, and a bunch more are in that one. So
great.
Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff on the website. I love to connect with folks and try to help with whatever I can. So Peggy and I were talking before the broadcast, and we've got such a similar concern to help other parents with the struggles that we've been through.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I've got all the answers, but I'm happy to point you
exactly.
in directions that were helpful for me.
Yeah. Or even just point, you know, I find that, you know, I've made enough connections. I can tell you who you need to go to now. Because I might not have all the answers, but I know enough people that have enough answers that we can find a common, you know, something to work it out. So that's the beauty of working in a community. And
yes.
And doing these interviews, I learn so much every week. I don't know if everybody else watches them, but I'm here and I'm just absorbing it all and thinking, oh, how I should have done it differently. But, you know, I think that's the one question at the end. You know, we may be beating ourselves up if we have older children. And so what parting advice do you have for parents who think, you know what, I missed out on this?
Well, that's something I've experienced even going back to when I was writing the first book. I would read stuff and think, why hadn't I read this 10 years ago? Some books had even been on my shelf and I just hadn't taken the time to read them.
No.
Well, I got the best answer to this. One day I was reading and my son came down here to where my office is and he could tell I was sad. And he said, what's wrong? And I said, I'm just wishing I'd read this 10 years ago. This would have been so helpful for you. Well, this guy's, he's now 6'1". He pats me on the shoulder and says, Mom, it's okay. God knew you weren't going to read it till now. And I thought, well, if I have to choose between having the kid who's struggled with reading and didn't finish college and has had all these difficulties and having a kid who didn't understand God's care and sovereignty, I think I've got what I wanted. I've got the guy, you know, he may not be the one you want to, teach calculus to anybody, but most of us don't want to teach calculus anyway, but I want someone who grasps those important things, and he has many other gifts. So realizing that even that business of finding out right answers too late, maybe the Lord's showing you those answers because you're going to meet somebody next week or next month that you'll be able to help that way.
Yeah.
So
that's
goes back to good trust.
Advice. Yeah. Yeah. We can't beat ourselves up for something we didn't know.
Doesn't help.
And God knew we didn't know it. Like, you know, your son said, it's just, that's just it. We're not perfect. So,
no.
So yeah, we just, learn every day. Well, thank you again, Kathy, for your time with us. This has been so enlightening and I so enjoyed our discussion. And, so maybe we'll have to have you back again to,
that would be fun. This has been a treat. And I just want to say to folks, if this is your first time watching one of Peggy's chats, she's got wonderful people. Go through her archives and watch these. The folks at Sped Homeschool have tons of resources. I know most of you already know that, but I'm just delighted to have connected with Peggy. And well, Lord bless your work. You're doing some great things.
We're 1 year in, so we'll see where God takes it from here. But yeah, we've got podcasts on our podcast channel and YouTube station with all the back issues. My son, when he finished editing, I think we're at 25 now, but we got to 24. He goes, you know that you could watch yourself for 24 hours now? Oh, that would be a long day. Probably not. But yes, so... So yeah, so we just want to thank all of you for joining us. And definitely this will be coming out as a podcast on Sunday, as well as the full video. And then we'll have short videos throughout the week next week, like we do with all of our interviews. And I also want to thank the Learning Disabilities Association of America for partially funding this broadcast, and for people that make donations on our Facebook page, as well as on our website, who fund the rest of our efforts, because we are a 501c3 nonprofit. And make sure you check out our website at spedhomeschool.com. So until next week, we're going to keep the conversation going on our support group, as well as so our Facebook support group, as well as our resource sharing group on Facebook as well. So until then, oh, and next week, my special guest is Shelley Sangri, and we're going to talk about how to simplify your homeschool. So that's a wonderful topic, and we'll see you then. Bye.